Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Remember, FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hanging out today at Vanderbilt, and a big game coming up between Vanderbilt and Kentucky on Saturday. And right now we are pleased to be joined by Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee. Clark? Good to see you. What's going on?
Oh, not much. I'm happy to be with you. I'm impressed. I thought I'd walk into donuts and the like. I see like an apple and a pear and coffee.
As
you guys
tell,
keep it healthy
it's
in the
peak,
morning.
Peak athleticism. That's right.
Yeah. I fast early, but then it's when you have like three bacon double cheeseburgers later, it kind of defeats the purpose.
I figured that maybe Julia, our nutritionist, had come over and laid the law down, but she won't be around later for those. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
Could use some help there.
That's right. Well, Clark, obviously the bye week coming, and you always hear coaches talk about the bye week coming at a good time with the, you know, not only the physical grind that takes place throughout a college football season, but the mental grind as well. What was it like for you guys and yourself on the bye week, and do you feel rejuvenated now after the bye week? What's kind of the mood as you head into this game against Kentucky?
Yeah, we need the bye. I mean, I think we've talked as a team about this. The late season grind is always going to be there, and you know, obviously we haven't had the results we wanted, but it's always going to be something that you have to push through. And so learning and training how to do that. We wanted to accomplish three things in the bye week. We wanted to recruit. We wanted to develop our team, particularly develop some of the depth in our roster. And then we wanted to advance scout Kentucky, and we were able to do that while also kind of pulling back on the player load and keeping our intensity high. And then we took the weekend off and came back at it on Monday, and we've had a good week. And so I feel like the guys are re-energized. But no matter what, year one, year two, year three, year 10, you know, this time of the year is always going to be a challenge mentally and physically, and you have to train yourself to push through it.
I don't want to spend too much time on this, but real quickly, I will ask you to join me in eliminating bye as something we talk about in a regular season, because that's actually something that's in a tournament, and this was an off or idle week.
Well, all right, looked this up in the dictionary. Is literally wrong. Don't listen to
this.
Word,
this is a constant battle that we will probably never stop having.
This sounds pretty deep, and I my initial response is I kind of like the different perspectives. So it's an off week. We took an off week. I'm kind of
I'm
in the Rex Road boat.
All right, thank you so much.
Feel so much better. I appreciate it.
So Clark, Ken Seals, obviously, he's had the injury. He's getting better. What can you tell us about where he is now? I know you're going to wait. You know, you want to see how he looks this week and things like that, but what are his chances?
Well, you know, he's missed quite a bit of time, and so we want to give him the week to see. Not you know, like he came out on Monday and yesterday and looked really sharp, and I think it's a great you know, what Ken did over his month out was pull back physically, but he kept engaged mentally, and he kept working at his craft. He'd be up in the office late meeting with Coach Lynch, and this is what this program's going to go through from year one to year two, is this ability to pull up and kind of get perspective on how far we've come, and then, you know, really dial into some mental preparation into year two and be more confident and comfortable in our systems. He's come out this week and had a really good week of practice at this point, but we have to see again how that injury, you know, how he maintains control over it, how he throws the ball with consistency over time, because it's not just one day or 2 days. He needs to show a healthy week, and so we'll kind of take a look at the body of the work later in the week and make a determination who plays on Saturday. But we've been pleased with where he is, and I think it's a testament again to his work ethic. It's hard to stay engaged sometimes when you're out, and Ken was not just engaged but still leading the charge when it comes to preparation.
Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. Clark, I'm interested from your perspective just what this year has been like for you and learning and growing into your role as a head coach. Obviously, I mean, you've been around this game for a long time. You've been around the sport for a long time in a bunch of different roles as a player, as a coach. How different has it been being a head coach? What have you learned about being a head coach in your first year?
Well, I mean, it's obviously, it's just, everything is just magnified. So, you know, you go from a position coach where I always took great pride in having, like, great relationships, depth of relationship, and which allowed for me to really control, you know, the attitude and the direction of the unit. And so you have 12 to 15 guys that you, you spend a lot of time with, and there's respect and trust built, you know, and it's pretty natural because that's who you're spending all your time with. You elevate to coordinator, and now you've got 50 guys, and you realize it's challenging to get depth of relationship with 50 guys, though you attempt it, but you really rely on the assistant coaches that are working with you, and so now you start to learn how to manage, you know, other professionals, and really you understand that your message is important, but how they carry your message to their position groups is more important. Now, as head coach, you know, I've got 150 people, and you realize pretty quickly that, you know, it's the strength staff, it's our nutrition staff, it's athletic training staff, it's academics, it's the coaching staff. There are so many different influencers and people that interact with our players that, you know, there has to be alignment and there has to be a mutual understanding of what the mission is here. And so that's, you know, that's where you invest most of your time. You invest your time at the kind of the leadership level, and knowing that then trickles down to the players. And what I've learned is, you know, over my time is that, you know, also like these guys need to see me as I was as a position coach, as I was as a coordinator too. And so getting out there and mixing it up with them and having fun with the guys and creating an environment that's exciting and energized and enthusiastic, you know, has been part of this process for me too. And so there's been a lot of other things. I mean, you know, you talk about game situations and, you know, how to best position people to be successful. You know, when you're in charge of a side of a ball, it's very easy. You know exactly what your tasks are. Now when you're coaching the team, you know, how do I have impact for both sides and special teams without creating a situation where they're looking for me for direction? You know, I want them to be creative. I want them to have, the ability to create their systems and their game plans. And then where can I jump in and say, hey, how about you do it this way? Or you should try it this way, for them to be able to trust that relationship too, where not everything's a mandate. And it's been fun. I mean, we've had a good time. We've been shorter results. The games have been painful, and that's going to be true of any competitor in any situation. But you know, what's bubbling on in under the surface for us right now is positive, and it's energized, and you know, I'm really excited for the finish of the season. I'm really excited to plot the course into year two. There's just a lot of really, really great things ahead of us, it's been exciting.
Another aspect, obviously, of this job, so many different aspects, but you know, the recruiting piece. I think we're about 5 weeks away from the early signing period. So, how is that different along your path as a coach to now as a head coach, and how are things going?
Well, things are going well. I think just like anything that's building, you're gonna experience bumps in the road. You're gonna experience, I said from the get go, you know, part of our mission this class was to build a class where we were having to fight like crazy at the end, because, you know, we've done a great job identifying, you know, talented players, and we've done that. You know, we feel really good. There's two components here that are, I think, central to our story. The first is, you know, we have to find, you know, players that will help us close that talent gap. And we're looking for measurable speed, length, you know, frames and range. I mean, we want to make sure the raw material is brought into this program. And we have to have measurable aspects. We're not going off anecdote. We're not going just off film. It's got to be things that we know to be true about the players. The second thing is there's got to be a builder's mindset here. You know, the guys coming in have to know the vision, believe in the vision, and have the confidence of self to know that they're coming here to be a part of what will change this program and turn it into what we know it can be. They will be brought into a team now that it's been formed through the fire, and what we'll be left with in team two is just a really strong nucleus of players that share the vision of the program and that are anxious to actualize it. And so when you bring in the right kind of guys with, you know, skills that'll help us enhance our roster, you bring them into a strengthened nucleus where they're going to know exactly how Vanderbilt football functions from our older players. You see the starting point of what will become, you know, a force in our conference. And for me, the recruiting part is, you know, I've got to be big vision. I've got to be able to get with the parents. I've got to be able to sell, you know, the things that are on the come and why this program is distinct and the aspects of this program that we think make it special for young people to have opportunities to not compromise in their lives. And then again, just like I said with our team, I also have to be able to get on the phone and text and establish great connections because, you know, recruits just like players want to know the personality of their head coach. And I'm fortunate to have Barton and his staff helping me along the way. And, you know, I think all of our systems are a work in progress, but, you know, we are learning, growing every day. And I think we have a nice, we're at a nice starting point here, and we'll just continue to build as we move through the years.
How much are you looking forward to the blackout coming up on Saturday against Kentucky?
I'm excited for it. I think this is something that I've always wanted to do. It's a neat aspect, and I'm really excited. And this is, you know, there's going to come a point in time here where, you know, we're going to be playing in a stadium that is completely altered through Vandy United, and you're going to see just floods of people in black streaming into our stadium, and it's going to be like a concert in there. I mean, it's going to be crazy and loud, and, you know, we're not to that point yet, but it'll get there, and this is just year one and a starting point. But we want this program to be a part of the Nashville experience. You know, we're sitting here stitched in the middle of the city. We want it to be something where people can come take in a great game here and then finish the party down on Broadway. You know, our job right now is to build the product on the field to get people in the stadium. But over time, with the facility changes coming and all the things that are exciting on the horizon, this is going to be an incredible atmosphere and an incredible place to take in a football game.
I want to one day early welcome you to the 40s. It's your last day thanks. Of the 30s. Congratulations.
Yeah, my kids and my wife have reminded me, I think, every day this week. And the old jokes from my wife have started. In earnest. And so, you know, listen, I feel young. I feel sprightly.
Yeah.
We'll see how I feel tomorrow. Tomorrow may change, but today I'm still 39.
That's right. Hold on to that last name.
<That's right. laughs> Clark, we appreciate so much you taking time to come over this morning and join us, and looking forward to the game coming up on Saturday.
Always great to be with you guys, and really nice to do it in person, too.
Absolutely. Thanks, Vanderbilt Clark. Football coach Clark Lee, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Wednesday morning at 7 o'clock. We'll come back. We'll react to what Clark Lee had to say there. Take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game. YouTube today and every day. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, conveniently serving Middle Tennessee with 13 locations. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee for joining us here in the last segment. And Joe, it's interesting. You look at the job that Clark Lee has done so far. Obviously, in the beginning stages of trying to build a program here at Vanderbilt, had the final home game coming up on Saturday against Kentucky. As we mentioned in the last segment, a blackout game. Looks like there could be some new threads in that game, too. Looking forward to that coming up on Saturday against Kentucky. But where do you kind of evaluate where the Vanderbilt program is right now and the steps that Clark Lee has taken and the steps he still needs to continue to take to try and build this thing up to where he hopes it could get? It's going to be a process as you evaluate what he took over.
It's a massive job, and it's a difficult job. I do think that the facilities investment is a long time coming, very necessary, massive deal, and will make a difference. You know, the stadium, like, we're sitting here at Hawkins Field, which is, I mean, this baseball stadium is outstanding. I mean, yep. I think it's one of the best out there. And the setting here can't be better. You got Memorial Gym right behind us, where, of course, you know, Vanderbilt men open tonight. You got the stadium to the left of us. It's all connected. I think the way it's set up and where it is in this city, I mean, it's perfect. I mean, I think this is a great setting for everything. Obviously, the football stadium itself is something that needs a lot of work, a lot of money plowed into it. I mean, I've always believed that that stadium is like the perfect size. You know, I don't know that you build a completely new stadium on that site, but you got to do a lot of work. But that's fan experience, and I think Clark touched on it in your last question about the blackout.
Yeah.
I mean, this should be an entertainment option that people in this city, which continues to grow rapidly, take seriously, and whether they're a Vanderbilt alum or Vanderbilt fan growing up or not, go watch SEC football in the city. That's a great attraction. It should be something that people want to do. It has not been lately. I mean, the last home game I was at, it was very sparsely attended. Road teams have, their fans have taken over some of these games recently. So that's what you're inheriting. It's a huge, huge job. I think anybody being realistic had to know that on the field this year it wasn't going to go especially well. They went, they didn't win a game last year, all SEC schedule. But they've had some good moments this year. The South Carolina game that they should have won. That's the Stanford game. Really, they were right there with that team. Obviously. You got the Colorado State win after the opener against East Tennessee State. It's hard. I mean, the recruiting is going well, it appears. I know that they did just have, I think, a corner who decommitted. And I think that may be a little bit of what Clark was referencing there. It's like you want to be in battles at the end here with guys other teams want.
Yep.
So they were in the top 25 in the summer. I think they're in the 30s still, which would be good. I mean, that would be a good ranking class for Vanderbilt. I mean, really, they're right behind Tennessee right now. In the rankings, so it's one class, but it seems like it's a foundational class for what Vanderbilt wants to be, and it's a long process, and it's one of those things like what needs to come first. I mean, you want to show some things on the field, you want to be able to go out and get some players, but like, at what point is Vanderbilt going to be ready to, actually compete to, to have a bowl bid, a postseason bid? I don't know. I mean, I think the idea is not that it's going to take 4 or 5 years, but I mean, right now they are definitely in a situation where they just need they need a lot more players.
They need a lot more players, and you look at this team. I mean, you've got Kentucky coming up on Saturday, then you travel to Ole Miss, take on that offense. And then the way Tennessee's offense is humming along right now, I mean, I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to look at this schedule and think to yourself, I mean, there could be some tough days ahead for Vanderbilt to close out the season, just defensively based on the offenses that they're about to play. I mean, Kentucky has been struggling a little bit more as of late. You still look at that game against Tennessee. They put up 42 points and 600 yards of offense. They moved the ball pretty well in that game. So a big challenge coming up on Saturday against Kentucky for Vanderbilt, and then those last two games to close out the season. You got Matt Corral in that Ole Miss offense, and then the way Hendon Hooker's playing right now. I mean, it's just, you're asking a lot of this Vanderbilt defense in the last three games of the season.
Yeah, it's the last two, of course, throwing the ball over the field. Kentucky able to throw up, but very physical running team coming in here Saturday night. So it's tough. I mean, right now Vanderbilt 0-5 in the SEC. It would be a massive upset somewhere along the way for them to not be 0-8 and then finish 2-10, which I may have picked them to go 4-8, I guess. I mean, I think that's about it's a loaded schedule. They've got deficiencies. I think down the stretch you want to see, you want to see them battle. You want to see them be competitive. You want to see Ken Seals come back and play well at quarterback. It sounds like he has a good chance, although, Clark Lee isn't confirming right now that, that he's going to play. But you want to see him come back, and I still think that Vanderbilt with Ken Seals, with the receivers, I mean, I think that's a group that can do damage. I think against all three of those opponents coming up. So, you want to see competitiveness. I mean, realistically, getting close to winning any of those games, like being in those games in the fourth quarter, that'd be a big surprise.
When we come back, we'll get into the college football playoff rankings that were released again last night. Is there any team out there that we actually believe can challenge Georgia this year? We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, conveniently serving Middle Tennessee with 13 locations. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Talking college football, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe Rex Road, the college football playoff rankings coming out again last night, the second edition of the college football playoff rankings. To no one's surprise, Georgia number one, Alabama remains at number two, Oregon at three, Ohio State at number four, which means Michigan State now out of the top four. They drop down to seven. Cincinnati is at five. Michigan jumps ahead of Michigan State, even though there's a head-to-head loss 2 weeks ago to Michigan State. Michigan is at number six. Oklahoma at undefeated, still remaining at number eight. So the top four, Georgia, Alabama, Oregon, and Ohio State. You know, there were some people on Twitter last night that say, did you watch Alabama play against LSU? Didn't look all that great. I mean, I guess my response to that would be, did you watch Oregon play? Did you watch Ohio State play against Nebraska? Nobody was really all that great outside of Georgia, and it just kind of looks like right now Georgia and everybody else in college football.
It does. And, yeah, I guess the one thing, not that we needed the rankings to tell us this, but it does confirm that Cincinnati gets a little help. With Michigan State losing, you know, Cincinnati, we talked earlier on the show about this horrible possibility, which I refuse to acknowledge as reality. I mean, in all seriousness, I don't think it's...
It'd be hard.
I don't think it's real. But this idea that Notre Dame, you know, wins out and somehow leapfrogs Cincinnati. Ryan Poor said he will never watch college football again. I almost wanted to see it happen just to...
Test that theory?
Yeah. I mean, you know, he would have to never watch college football again, but... That's and the idea. Well, you brought it up. The idea because Michigan State was just leapfrogged by Michigan. But honestly, I mean, I think it is pretty funny that like a week after beating a team, you're behind them. But if the committee just said this, well, Michigan's loss is at Michigan State, a top 10 team, and Michigan State's loss is at Purdue. That's a worse loss.
Well, I found the tweet. It's from Roger Sherman of The Ringer. It says, quote, okay, I get it now. Michigan ahead of Michigan State is just the committee testing out the head-to-head isn't all that important to us so they can put 11-1 Notre Dame in over Cincinnati.
Stop it, Roger. Stop it. I'm assuming he was joking. Well, the funny thing, like the head-to-head or whatever it is, I mean, they have from year one. With a given ranking said this matters, and then in a different ranking, sometimes involving the same teams, they say, no, this criteria matters more. I mean, it's all obviously subjective. he's talking about, you know, metrics last night and things like that. And, you know, ultimately, I think this is going to all work itself out. The one thing that is on the table to me is this idea of the Big Ten knocking itself out of the playoff. I mean, I think that's possible. We have the ACC, who is just a complete afterthought. I mean, Wake Forest lost. But, I mean, even before that, Wake Forest undefeated and just zero chance to get in, right? But the Big Ten, if somebody can get Ohio State and give them two, I think Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State, they're all still a bunch of games between those teams. Like, there's a scenario here where there's nobody in the Big Ten in this. You got Georgia, Alabama. Of course, then you also have the scenario. What if Alabama just gets absolutely trucked by Georgia?
Yep.
But then the Big Ten does that to itself. I mean, well, at some point, it's like maybe they'll just like, you know what? Can we just have a two-team playoff or just award it to Georgia and not have the games?
Well, the most interesting race to me in all this is the Big 12 because Oklahoma still has Baylor on the schedule, and they've got Oklahoma State and Iowa State on the schedule as well. Right now in the college football playoff rankings, Baylor's at 13. Oklahoma State is at 10. I'm here to tell you, Oklahoma's at 8 right now. If they beat Baylor, Oklahoma State, and Iowa State, they're getting in the college football playoff.
I agree.
So, you know, I think a lot of Oklahoma fans are mad right now at being number 8, and I understand you're undefeated and you're number 8. You're mad about that. Oklahoma's not looked all that impressive this year.
Not at all.
But if they beat Baylor, Oklahoma State, and Iowa State coming down the stretch, Iowa State to a lesser degree, but especially Baylor and Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, they're going to get in. I mean, they have so much room for upward trajectory that Cincinnati right now just doesn't have. Like, an undefeated Oklahoma is going to get in the playoff.
Yeah, no, I agree. And so now I'm not certain, I'm far from certain that they're actually going to get that done.
I agree.
I mean, actually, I feel like Oklahoma State's going to get them this year. But
Gundy.
Yeah, the mullet, baby. But if they, by the way, Clark Lee, happy 40th tomorrow. You know, Mike Gundy was once a man. He was once 40.
He was. All time great soundbite.
Yeah. But if they get in there, okay, you assume probably Ohio State. I mean, Ohio State's probably going to beat Michigan State and Michigan and be fine and win the Big Ten championship game and get in. But I don't think, like, I watched that Nebraska game and they could be had. I mean, this is not a great Ohio State team. Let's say they get in. Georgia, obviously. Oklahoma moves up. You know, then you have – imagine if it's Alabama loses a close game to Georgia and Cincinnati is, you know, undefeated sitting there. And it's between one of those two teams for, like, the four.
Yeah.
I think Alabama would get it.
They might.
It's like if they're competitive against Georgia in Atlanta.
Well, that's the
thing. Honestly, like, I can't sit here and say, as much as I think it's wrong, this is where you have a committee and it's like, yeah. Who's better?
Well, the thing is, like, you know, you and I both had this passionate defense of Cincinnati last week. And, you know, they're still undefeated, but they continue to make life way more difficult on themselves than they need to make it. I mean,
agreed.
They had to hold on for dear life against Tulsa. Yeah. And, you know, after the first college football playoff rankings come out and you're at 6, you know, if you're Cincinnati at that point, you've got to play well. You needed to go out and absolutely hammer Tulsa. I mean, I think one of your picks in Pigskin Pick'em was Cincinnati by 30
plus. For them to do it. The only one I missed, by the way.
Hey, look at you. And then all of a sudden, Tulsa, you win 28-20, and you got to hold on in your own, like, basically your own goal line at the end of the game. That just, they continue to not help themselves in this discussion.
Yeah. And I think sometimes you can get in that mindset of we have to blow someone out, and you get outside your game a little bit.
Yeah.
Not trying to make excuses for them, but the bottom line is they have to look better. Does it ultimately matter? Like, I think maybe, like in that scenario I just laid out, maybe if they're squeaking by the rest of the schedule, I'm not sure what they have left here, but it's nothing great.
Well, the disaster scenario for the Big Ten and for the Oklahomas of the world, and certainly Cincinnati, what you can't have happen at this point is Alabama get to the SEC title game and beat Georgia.
Well,
because then both those are getting in, and they're going to be obviously two spots taken up by the SEC, and there's nothing anybody can do about it at that point. And then you've got the Big Ten, the Big 12, and Cincinnati all fighting for two spots. That's probably not going to end well for Cincinnati.
No, it probably won't. So, yeah, they finish, you know, USF, SMU, ECU. You know, I mean, this is the hard part. And, look, I understand the people who argue against the Group of Five teams say, look, good job with the big win you had, but if you had to go through the grind of this league or this league, that's just totally different. Even just in terms of the physical pounding your team takes relative to these teams in the SEC and Big Ten. I mean, look, it's a fair argument, but I still think that, you know, for as much as we just talked about this nightmare of Notre Dame leapfrogging them, Cincinnati does need Notre Dame to win out. They absolutely need Notre Dame to be 11-1 and look good doing it. And to again say at the end, look, we went to that team's place. We're the only team to beat them. We beat them by double figures. Now, we didn't have the opportunity some of these teams have to have impressive wins, but how could you not look at that and reward us for it?
Well, you need, if you're Cincinnati, you need Notre Dame to look really impressive down the stretch.
Yes.
I mean, you need them to look really good. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Adam in Portland texting in, when Alabama lost, I thought things could get interesting, but nope, still Bama and Georgia, like we all knew it would be. Makes me want to puke. Adam, not a fan of Alabama and Georgia, apparently.
I mean, I am here for the Alabama close loss to Georgia, two-loss team sitting there scenario. I am here for that. Whatever the rest of the picture looks like,
yeah.
And if it's, I mean, it's that's such a, and the thing is, as someone who ultimately is a consumer of college football, look, we all have fatigue over Alabama and Clemson and Georgia, right? It's Ohio State. Like, we all have that fatigue.
Sure.
And yet, as someone who wants to watch the best possible college football playoff, I'm not going to lie and say that I would rather see Cincinnati in over Alabama. I want Cincinnati to get in because I want a Group of Five team to have the opportunity, and I think this is a very good Group of Five team. But if Alabama does prove that it can play with Georgia in that game, I don't know, man.
Trevor Maddich said yesterday on Stillman and Company that a touchdown or less, if Alabama loses by a touchdown or less to Georgia, he thinks there's a legitimate chance they could still get in.
Yeah.
Is that the mark for you?
Yeah, that's probably. That makes sense to me. And there will be screaming and howling, and I get it. I do. You know, the interesting thing is there, if it's that scenario, then Alabama – I mean, there's no way you can justify Alabama being anything but the four.
Yeah.
So you would also be setting up an immediate rematch of those two teams. But if they play a good game, like, I don't know that anyone can give Georgia a good game other than them.
Well, you're still talking about at that point, though. I mean, there's never been a two-loss team that's gotten in. It does kind of feel like if that's going to happen, obviously that's going to happen at some point when they expand to 12.
Yes.
Like, two-loss teams are going to get in.
Oh, yeah.
But if that's going to happen while it's still at four, it does kind of feel like Alabama might be the team where that happens with.
I mean, who else, right?
Then they'll go on and win the national title, and it'll be same old, same old.
Well,
how about that for Georgia? You go undefeated, you beat them in the SEC title game, and then one and done in the playoff.
Well, I mean, if you're Georgia, you are the biggest Bearcats fans ever on Selection Day, if this is the scenario, because if you lose or you beat them in a close game, now they have the confidence they can play with you, and do we know the history with Kirby and Bam and everything? Ooh, boy. You don't want that rematch.
I'm here to tell you right now, Alabama better watch out for Auburn. Better watch. Jordan Hare has been an interesting place for him. Looking forward to that game.
I agree. I think that could be a good one.
When we come back, it is time for The Choice Is Yours. Michelle Knezovic in the questions chair this morning. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And it is that time of the week, time for The Choice Is Yours here on Robbie and Rex Road. We throw out different scenarios both in sports and in life and then debate on how we would respond to said scenarios. As always, we love and encourage your participate on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Michelle Knezovic in the questions chair today. Michelle, I turn things over to you.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
How we doing?
We are wonderful.
How
are you?
We're doing well, and I know that we have to do this quickly, but you know, we haven't had a chance to ask you what happened to your cats last night.
This is going right after.
Listen, I will say this. I was disappointed by the loss, but not discouraged.
Okay.
How about
that's
that?
Fair.
Right?
That's
I mean,
fair. Yeah.
Ty Washington, he's definitely got to step it up, but other than that, I mean, Duke looked really, really good, and that really pains me to say, but you know, disappointed, not discouraged. It's a long season, fellas.
There you go.
There you go.
Just game one.
Good outlook. Good outlook.
Okay. Sports or non-sports? What are we starting with?
Let's go sports.
Okay. We all know this whole Aaron Rodgers situation going on right now.
Yes,
you are a player on the Packers. He is your QB1. All this crap's going on. They just got fined. You have to say something to him. What do you say to him?
Well, It's interesting because, as Charles Robinson said, the conversation's a little different after Sunday. I think the first thing I'm saying if I'm a player on the team right now is, hey, please get back quickly and be available on Sunday so we can start winning games. You know, I don't know. I don't anticipate the players in the locker room really saying all that much to him. You know, it's obviously the number one story in sports right now. And I'm sure that there are players in the locker room that looked at some of the comments that Roger said and be like, really, dude? Like, this is what you're going to do while we're – especially the timing of it. Like, you think back to the McAfee show when he came on, what was that, last Friday? And they're getting ready to play and travel for a game against Kansas City. LaFleur is getting up to talk at the microphone. And about 5 minutes before that happens, Rodgers is going on a 46-minute rant on the Pat McAfee show. I thought Max Kellerman from ESPN really explained this well the other day. And I'm not always the biggest Max Kellerman fan out there, but I thought he explained this really well the other day. A lot of what Rodgers said, I think you look at it and you just kind of roll your eyes. There were some legitimate points that he brought up that I think are actually worthy of discussion. But when these two things happen, you totally invalidate yourself. Like, you can't just sit there and act like you didn't lie and use those terms. And when there's a clear video evidence of you saying, yes, I'm immunized, when asked if you're vaccinated. And the other thing that, you know, Kellerman pointed out that I thought was really interesting of, you know, you've obviously taken a different approach. You say that you're allergic to the ingredients in the vaccine. That's fine. Whatever you want to say, if your doctor's told you that, whatever. But when you're asked what you did in response to the not taking the vaccine and the medical procedure that you used, and you're not willing to talk about it, like, how can you expect people to have a conversation with you if you're not willing to talk about the procedure that you use? So it's a big mess. I don't really anticipate it being that much of a problem in the Packers locker room just based on his ability to play football on the field. But honestly, I don't know what I'd say to him. I don't anticipate a lot's going to be said.
I say, shut your mouth, get your ass on the field, and lend me $1 million.
I love that so much. For all my pain and suffering, give me a mil.
So Alan Lazard and Rodgers both got fined like $14,000. I do wonder if Rodgers just looks at Lazard and be like, hey, man, I'll take care of that one for you.
Better. You better.
Yeah, I think similar to Robbie, I would just be like, hey, like, just let's just own it. You know, like Lamar Jackson, he wasn't immunized. Just be like, hey, you know what? What I said, and I think he has since, you know, but, and then I would be like, let's not let this affect, you know, our team, because obviously the Packers look good this year. They have a chance to go deep into the playoffs, and you wouldn't want to see something so stupid like that affect them winning, because Mr. Love wasn't giving the team so much love. Okay. What was that? Sports. Okay. Non-sports. You can only celebrate one holiday for the rest of your life. What is that holiday?
Oh, this one's easy for me. I'm going Thanksgiving. A lot of people love Christmas. I love Christmas, too. A lot of people love July 4th. I'm a big fan of most holidays. I think Thanksgiving is the most underrated holiday out there. Number one, for the thankfulness that we should all have of the things we have in our daily life. But the food on Thanksgiving, to me, unrivaled. Thanksgiving does not get enough love. There are people, even as we speak, listening to Christmas music, putting out holiday decorations right after Halloween. It happens on November 1st every year, Rex Road. It's like people look right past Thanksgiving. Not me. I will not fall victim to that. I love Thanksgiving. It's my favorite holiday the entire year.
I'm going to copy Robbie on that. I like Thanksgiving for a lot of things. You know, Christmas, obviously there's more meaning there beyond the celebration of the holiday, but there's more meaning for Thanksgiving as well. And just the week of it, the even just the football, the food, the basketball, yeah. I mentioned that too. I think it's the best. And yeah, but mostly the food.
Caleb on the text line says Arbor Day. Arbor Day is the holiday that he would choose.
We should love our trees more.
We should.
Guys, I think this is it's 3 for 3. I'm going the same thing. There is nothing more that bothers me than when people decorate their entire place Christmas on November 1st before Thanksgiving is so great. You got the food, the little turkeys. I remember, like, in elementary school, you decorate the turkey. Like, it was so fun, you know? You're with your family, big dinner. Same thing for me. I can't get with the Christmas starts on November 1st.
Well, maybe Thanksgiving is not as underappreciated as I originally thought.
Well, another thing is, if you could have this as the only holiday, then you would eliminate Black Friday, which is one of the worst things that we do in this country. Yes.
Scary.
Right?
Black Friday is terrifying. Okay, so that was non-sports. Moving back to sports, if you could co-host a sports show with anyone, like a show that already exists, which show would it be?
Joe Rexroth.
Robbie and Rexroth. I mean, hello. That's
let's just take it. Let's take us out of the equation.
Well, okay. Well, look. I mean, my answer has got to be like if I could do the Ernie role for Inside the NBA. Yeah, that's the easy answer. I mean, just to be able to sit there. Although I would not be able to be professional and composed as I fall over laughing every show at stuff Barkley and Shaq say. But yeah, that's the easy answer for me.
I would go. I mean, that's certainly I think the top of the list. I mean, recently I've thought about what it may be like to host a show with Chris Broussard. Like, you never know what's going to come out of his mouth. I think Chris Broussard has a lot of good things to say basketball wise, but talking some football, maybe a football show. Saturday morning football show with Chris Broussard might be a little fun.
Like a college football show.
Yeah, really get deep into the weeds there.
That's by the way, real quick, that's one of my favorite things about Barkley is at the beginning of the NCAA tournament, when he clearly hasn't watched a second of college basketball, he starts talking NCAA tournament stuff.
The best segment on TV is the Who He Play For segment with Barkley, who has no idea who anybody plays for outside of like the All-Stars in the NBA. It's great stuff.
That is the best show on TV, hands down. But, Joe, I don't think you'd be able to stay serious. I don't know how Ernie does it. I would fall out of my chair laughing.
He's a pro. What's your answer?
College game day. I love being like in the element, not in a studio where you're like away from everything. College game day in the morning or like the countdown to kickoff when all the fans have been like camping out all morning. They've got their signs. I feel like that is like the true testament of how much passion and how much the fan base just loves that football team. I want to be right in the thick of it. Throw me in the crowd. Get me crowd surfing with the mic. College game day for sure.
Nice.
And then lastly, I feel like this is kind of sports too, but also non-sports. If you could be a mascot for one day, which mascot would you be?
Which mascot would you be?
First of all, I will say no mascot where you have to wear like the full mascot thing. I do not want to try to breathe in those things. I've heard about the stench. I know some people who were Sparty at Michigan State, and I've heard that the stench in those things is absolutely astounding. So the Syracuse orange, all that stuff, I want none of that. In fact, give me the leprechaun. Give me the leprechaun. Okay. You get to just put on a green hat. I can put a fake red beard on. I mean, you're ready for it right now, man. You can just go do it.
Go Irish.
You got to flip a little bit. I can work on that. But, it's a good stadium, good football. Give me the leprechaun.
In honor of my good friend Chris Jones with Nashville SC, my thought on this was immediately the Delta State Fighting Okra. I will be the Fighting Okra 7 days a week.
Is it like a big costume with a big piece of okra?
With boxing gloves on. It's the greatest thing ever. The Fighting Okra.
Oh, that's fun.
I don't know if you see Santa Cruz, like what it looks like, but the banana slugs, like that would be awesome. I don't know what it is. I have to Google it. But the UC Santa Cruz banana slugs is probably the best mascot. So what that would look like a rotten banana or something, that would be amazing.
There's a nice t-shirt out there with the Fighting Okra that just says Fear the Okra. With the okra boxing glove mascot on there.
That's awesome.
We know what you're getting right now. We know what we're getting you for Christmas, Robbie.
That's right.
See, I think it would be fun to wear the costume because it's such a secret. Like, that was such a big thing. Everybody was trying to figure out who was the mascot at Kentucky. We know I'd be the Kentucky Wildcat, and I would just run around, jump on the trampolines. They throw them up there in a stunt. I would have the time of my life. I'd be doing cartwheels all over the place. It'd be amazing.
Do we think we're ever going to reach a point where, like, Michelle She's just emotionally exhausted with Kentucky.
I'm such here we a are, homer.
Here we are this week. They've gotten beaten by Tennessee, and they just lost to Duke last night. So losses in football and basketball, and here she is, still fired up about Kentucky.
I was going to say, Michelle, I mean, honestly, I think that you'd be great at that. And in particular, you know, I think the importance of that mascot increases. Like, for example, if you have like an NIT home game,
yeah,
you really want to increase the entertainment around the game for the people. And I think that would be awesome.
Guys, come on. Why are you kicking me while I'm down? I did say this, though. Elijah and I have a college basketball podcast. And I did say when we were previewing the Champions Classic games, Elijah gave like a nice analysis of Kentucky basketball, and I straight up said, well, I'm a homer, and I'm going to fully embrace the fact that I'm totally taking Kentucky to win. But I feel like if I embrace it and just tell people, like, hey, I'm a homer, like, I'm going to pick them every time, you know, then I'm not really steering them wrong.
That's true.
I mean, Elijah gave an unbiased answer.
The march to the NIT began last night.
The march to the national championship. Thank you very much. That is your edition of Michelle's The Choice Is Yours.
Thank you very much. We'll do The Choice Is Yours every Wednesday morning at 7:45. When we come back, we'll get back into the Titans. We'll be joined by our good friend Ben Arthur from the Tennessean. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.